Silence!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerf Ray Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 32 of Nerd Pride Radio. 32, that, oh my goodness, that's 2 to the 5th power. It's the square root of 1,024. It's the number of combinations of fingers that you can count on one hand, something that, by the way, I do regularly. 32 is awesome. What a great way to come back to this show. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I'm a D&D nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's probably like 7 other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio. This is the place where I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my head anymore. As always, you're listening to the best-smelling podcast on the internet. That's right. 4 out of 5 astrophysicists agree. Nerd Pride Radio smells like raspberries. How nice. Before we do anything, though, let's start off with a little meta-talk.
Oppenheimer!
Yeah, meta-talk is where I kind of pull the curtain back a little bit, talk about the podcast and the website, and we have a huge elephant in the room. I know I've been gone for 4 months. Yeah, I know, you got last week's episode, which was really just the one I recorded 4 months ago and just gave you a half-finished episode. Apparently, I take the summers off. Who knew? So, I am so sorry. I could have sent you a note. I could have put up a little 5-minute something or other to explain what was going on for those of you who don't visit the website. I could have done something and I didn't. So I apologize terribly, and it's now going to take me all year to win all my subscribers back. That's okay. I'm willing to work for it. The deal is, when summer comes around, my wife is a teacher, so my wife is off of school, my kids are off of school, and we just have jam-packed, action-filled summers, a lot like watching Phineas and Ferb, to tell the truth. If you've seen that show, it's all about the summer. And so, apparently I take time off. This happened the year before, but I thought it was just because I had just started the podcast. I did like 5 episodes and then took a 4-month break over the summer, and then finally came September, I got back into it. I was just going great guns all year long, did really well, getting out episodes almost every week. And then summer came again, and guess what? I took 4 months off. So next summer, probably going to be the same thing, but at least this time I'll see it coming and I'll warn you guys about it. In the meantime, welcome to season 3. This is going to be a great time. And actually, now, still before we actually start, we got to listen to a little feedback. That's right. From the forums, Jeff Hawes writes, "You know what I miss about NPR right now?" NPR, of course, being Nerd Pride Radio. You all know that. He says, "I'm not getting any talk about Curiosity. I should totally be hearing one of the Joneses talking about the awesomeness of robots on Mars." Dude, you are so right. Did I about pee my pants watching the landing? Space Crane? Do you need more than Space Crane? This is the most awesome thing ever. And I understand, look, we've had rovers on Mars before, still have rovers on Mars. We've sent another one. We've had plenty of missions going. Obviously, this isn't a manned mission, which would be just a dream come true. But we've got Curiosity on Mars. We've got Curiosity, which is big enough to kick the crap out of any previous rovers and carries around lasers to pulverize rock. What more do you want? Me and my second son were just listening to a podcast the other night talking about Curiosity and talking about the lasers and all this. And he looks at me and says, wait a minute. We have a rover up there with space lasers that can vaporize rocks? I'm like, Yeah, pretty much. He says, and all we've got here on Earth to shoot people with is bullets thrown out of a gun? That's it? So I guess he has a point. Dude, we've got space lasers that vaporize stuff. How cool is that? I can't tell you. This is, again, it's just one more step on the way towards the rest of our lives. I don't want to build up like, you know, putting a man on Mars is the be-all, end-all of everything, because curiosity and everything that's come before, this is amazing stuff. I'm still, fingers crossed, holding out hope that it's going to find some signs that life exists or once existed on Mars. And you know why that's important to me? I mean, obviously, because, you know, it would be awesome to find life outside of Earth, and it would be really, really super cool, and it would have to, you know, force us to revise a lot of the way we think about the universe. But if we find life on Mars, one of the most obvious implications of that is, you know, we found life on Earth, obviously, because it's us. And then the first place we check where life is capable of existing, it did, or it does. That means life probably exists everywhere in the universe. I mean, I know life exists somewhere outside of Earth, all right? We are not unique. There is somewhere in the trillions upon quadrillions of stars and galaxies and everything else that's available to us, somewhere this miracle has happened in another form, all right? We know it's happened. But to find out that it's common, that we're going to find it everywhere, oh, that would be so cool. But even better than that, well, wait, you know, wait. Let me not get ahead of myself. We'll save the next part for the science corner, because there's more cool science coming up. Thank you, Jeff, for your feedback, and I'm glad to be back, and I'm glad to open up this podcast with your name. What could make it any better? In the meantime, what do we got? Oh, updates! I've been reading Song of Ice and Fire. I'm up to book 4 now. You guys know that I've been reading it, and I'm not going to do a full book review. I'm just going to tell you that book 4 is a little it's a little slower paced. I feel like we're in a transition book. I feel like it's book 4 of Harry Potter for all that. Remember how the first 100 pages of book 4 of Harry Potter just dragged? And it got all better, you know, but man, it just dragged. I feel like that's what I'm doing with book 4 of Song of Ice and Fire. I feel like, I mean, obviously he made a conscious decision that a lot of our favorite characters are being left in the shadows. We're not seeing them. We're hearing rumors about them indirectly, but you know, seriously, Tyrion's my favorite. I love Tyrion. I love Bran. If I say any more names, I'll give stuff away. And we're intentionally steering away from those. I mean, okay, Sansa Stark is interesting, but she's not that interesting. At least not yet. Jaime Lannister, I enjoy Jaime Lannister. He's turning out to be a cool character. I like where he's going with this, but it's not Tyrion. It's not the imp. All right, so again, book started off slow. It's picking up a little bit. I'm really looking forward to getting to book 5 because I'm hoping that that's where the action starts again. I hope we start learning some things. I'm hoping. I actually have a very specific vision in my head that book 4 here is going to end with Cersei's fortune coming true. I'm hoping that that's how this book ends. It's been foreshadowed. We see it kind of coming. I'm really hoping that happens because that would be so cool. But enough about that. I'll do some more Ice and Fire review stuff when I get through book 5 because I feel like I'm talking too much about it. And I've got so much that I need to tell you guys. I feel, you know, I shouldn't take this long a break. I mean, obviously I had a choice and I chose not to come back until now. But, oh man, I've missed you guys. So, all right, now, let me sort out my thoughts. Where am I? Oh, that's right. Now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me where I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week or 4 months or however it works out. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff from that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. It's a, you know, when you take 4 months off, some of these pre-written intros, they really, every time it talks about every week, I feel a little guilty, a little bit. But let's check out my master list. Very first thing on it is a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are so, so close. My nerd culture report is about nerd t-shirts. This is actually not, you know, normally I'm pretty upbeat. I'm pretty positive. I'm an optimistic kind of guy. I love life. I love all things nerd. But I had cause to be a little brought down, a little put in my place. We did some school shopping to get new clothes for the kids. And as we're at Target, Target of all places, we're looking through the t-shirt selection in Target, and, oh, this one's cool, this one's cool. And there was one, it was a Family Guy t-shirt. All right, and it's got Stewie on it, and it's Stewie making a really, really lame Facebook joke. All right, it's how do I unlike you in real life, or how do I ignore in real life, something like that. But it was a Facebook reference, and it was a lame joke that you've seen a million times online. And here, Seth MacFarlane has apparently signed off on putting those words into Stewie's mouth for a cheap-ass t-shirt. And it was really, I mean, you know, not that I think that, you know, Family Guy or Seth MacFarlane in general is the paragon of artistic integrity. It's not anything like that. But I like Family Guy. I like MacFarlane's work for the most part. And it was just sad to see something that was obviously a complete sellout move. And the more I looked, the more I realized, yeah, there's a lot of that. And I'm looking around Target now, and that led me to realize that all of the shirts, all of them in the Target t-shirt section were nerd shirts. I mean, okay, there was a few hipster shirts. There's kind of the retro gaming stuff, the retro band stuff, the retro product placement stuff, kind of hipster douchebag sort of things. But there's just tons of nerd jokes, nerd stuff everywhere, whether it was Star Wars or Legos or Lego Star Wars or references to Family Guy or it was all nerd material everywhere. And I'm thinking, wow, I don't feel so special anymore. I mean, and I've known this. I've seen it coming for a long time that nerd culture has really become very, very mainstream. So here I am, you know, trying to be unique with my Nerd Pride Radio. And yet, nerds are everywhere. Everybody's claiming to be a nerd. There are ironic nerds and hipster nerds and just douchey nerds. We're everywhere. And like I say, it made me feel a little bit less special. And so I looked at all of the really cool nerd t-shirts that I have at home, and I'm like, yeah, this doesn't make me unique anymore. Everybody buys this crap. Everybody. Oh, so sad. So, again, the lesson, I guess, is that when your particular niche culture has been mainstreamed by Target and Walmart, you're not as niche as you thought you were. Hard, hard, painful lesson. But on a happier note, did you see what I have on my gaming table? I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die. That's right. Role-playing games, video games, card games. If it fits on my gaming table, then I'm coming here to share it with you. And this week, I am sharing Carcassonne. I don't even know how you pronounce it. It's French. Carcassonne? Is that the pronunciation? All I know is whenever we pull it out at home, which, by the way, we do like four times a week. We're playing this thing like crazy. We always pull it out, and we always go, Carcassonne! And do a really bad Marie Chevalier accent. But Carcassonne is awesome. And I understand the game's been out for 10 years. I understand lots of you have already played it. I don't care. I'm going to describe it to you now. Carcassonne is a tile-laying game, which I've never done a whole lot of. And I'm really excited. It is supposedly the medieval city and countryside of Carcassonne in France. And every turn you lay down a tile. You draw a tile, and you have to find some place to place it on the map, like playing dominoes, except that the maps have cities and fields, farms, roads, cloisters, all sorts of stuff. And you place them down. And then there's a secondary part of the game that as this map builds, you also have the option of you have a limited number of pieces that you can lay down to claim different territories. You can claim a city and your guy becomes a knight. You claim a road and your guy becomes a thief, whatever. But you claim them and now no one else can take that stretch. And however long you build it, no one else can touch that. And then as sections get closed off, you score points. At the end, you score more points for all the territory you've claimed. And whoever has the most points wins. It is so amazingly simple that I'm blown away by it. I love Carcassonne. And the best part for me is it is simple enough that every single person in my family plays it. All right. Me and the 17-year-old and the 14-year-old can play the crap out of this and actually do strategy. And not that we're really good at strategy yet, but we're getting there. We're learning. But the 9-year-old and the 6-year-old, they can hop right in because even if you don't win, it's so much fun to build that map. It's so fun just to get the pieces in the right place and watch something. When you fill in this gap that's been sitting there, you fill in a gap and it scores you some points, and now the map is complete there. It's beautiful. it's just, there's a satisfaction in it for everyone in my family, and we love playing it. And again, it's going to get to the point where most games, the 6-year-old and the 9-year-old are going to be completely outstripped. And that's just the way things happen. And that's fine, because they're still having a good time. Whether I win, whether I lose, I have a great time playing this game, and so do my kids. It's a wonderful, wonderful game. There are some expansions to it, and I did some research, and there's a couple of expansions I want to pick up. The two of the earlier ones that expand a little bit on some of the territories and how things balance. You guys don't care about the details of that, but I'm going to get those ultimately, probably for Christmas or something. And then I will tell you about them after I do that, and I'm really excited. I just love this game. I'm so glad, and I've had the game for a long time. It was one of a bundle of games that I got for, I think, my birthday, which was back in March. And we just finally got around to it this summer, had time to play it, and we've just been pulling it out all the time. I'm just excited. There's two other games that I have, but I haven't tried. I've gotten a bundle of games for the last Christmas, birthday, this kind of stuff. And it's gotten me excited to go, hey, you know what? There is some really, really cool stuff out there that I just haven't gotten to yet. So I'm excited to keep trying them. And as always, you know, I'll let you know. I need to fill up an hour and a half somehow, right? Okay. That takes us to... Did I say I was going to take you guys to the science corner again?
Oh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
Yeah, there it is. That music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. Okay. I can't even tell you how much I love this. The James Webb Space Telescope. They're putting it together now. They're starting. They've got mirrors built and they're packaging them up and they're getting things assembled. The James Webb Space Telescope. All right, you know how when you hear the word Hubble, immediately you don't think of the scientist Hubble anymore. All you think of when someone says Hubble is you think of the space telescope, right? Okay, I know I do. All right, well, in 10 years, well, less than that even, when you hear James Webb or just Webb, immediately you're going to think the coolest space telescope in the world. It's going to replace Hubble. It is amazing. And to me, the sad part is, it's not going to be ready until 2018. All right, that's when they're anticipating having this thing out there. But the James Webb Space Telescope is 21 feet across the collecting mirror is for this thing. 21 feet. That is 2.5 times the diameter of the 8-foot Hubble telescope, which means it's, you know, something like, what, 5 times the collecting area, 6 times the collecting area? In 2018, when this thing goes up, I am not kidding you. They're talking about seeing the beginning of time. All right. And that sounds really fantastical. That sounds like an over exaggeration to talk about seeing, but if the universe is 18 billion years old, 15 billion years old, well, I can't remember the number that we've settled on now. If we can see 18 billion light years with this thing, then that's what we're looking at. We're looking at the beginning of time. We're looking at the processes that formed the very beginning of this universe. How can you not be in love with that? But even cooler than that is, did I say light years or miles? 18 billion light years. I hope that's what I said. Anyway, even cooler than that for me, you know how I love planets. I just one scientist as a throwaway comment on it, he said, yeah, once James Webb is up there, we're hoping that we're going to be able to just direct image planets around other stars. And what? Oh, my jaw dropped. Really? Direct? Meaning, because right now, everything we know about exoplanets, and there's hundreds and thousands of exoplanets that we've identified, and I love exoplanets. I love planets that orbit other stars. I love planets in general. Cool, cool stuff. But right now, everything we know about the exoplanets is all inferred. We look at the wobble of the star. We look at the transit as the planet passes in front of the star. We look at all sorts of other factors about that star that tell us that, yes, there's a planet there. We can tell a lot about that planet. We can tell how far out it is. We can tell generally how big it is. We can learn a lot about them. But he's talking about looking at them. I mean, just straight up, aim a telescope out there and look at it. Let me repeat that. We're going to look at other planets around other stars. Just see them. All right. Maybe not in high-resolution detail, but we'll be looking at them. Think of the things we're going to learn. Think of what we'll know. I can't even fathom this, all right? And like I say, it seems like a long way away. You say it's going to be up there by 2018, you know, by 2019, 2020, it's going to be this household word and everything coming back to us. But do you remember, maybe you're not as old as I am, when the Pioneer spacecrafts launched, when the Voyager spacecrafts launched? I remember when Voyager went up, all right? I was like 6 or 7 years old, and I remember sitting in a dentist's office and reading a magazine that I think was aimed at kids, but it didn't matter. I was reading a magazine that was talking about the launch of Voyager. And I remember seeing it, and it was talking about how, oh, yeah, in 20 years, we'll be able to see this. And in 30 years, we'll do this. And in 40 years, it will leave the solar system entirely. And I remember seeing that and thinking, well, God, that's forever, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, what's the point of telling me now? But I was excited about it, but also so disappointed that, you know, I'm only 7, and they're telling me that it's going to be, you know, 15 years before I get anything interesting out of this. That's a lifetime away from me. Well, 2 lifetimes at that point. But then it happened. That's the magic, is it happened. And I got to watch as pictures came back from Voyager around Jupiter, Voyager passing by Saturn, Voyager getting to the edges of the solar system, and it's on its way out. I've seen all of that happen. And every single time, I'm just so amazed. I've watched this entire journey from beginning to end, and I find it fascinating. And so that's what James Webb is for me right now. It's like 6 years. See, that's nothing. I got 6 years. I can wait, and it's going to be the coolest. Wait. Can you guys hear that? That's right, off in the distance. The rising cry of Roku! That's right. I use Roku, my Roku box, to watch Netflix instant watch movies and TV shows and whatnot. And I love my Roku. And I have been watching a lot of it lately. And one of the things that I hit on over the summer is I found out that I like, or at least I think I do, Scandinavian horror movies. Now, this is the thing. I've only got, you know, 3 or 4 of them under my belt right now. And I like the ones I've seen, but it's one of those things that it would be kind of cool to be able to tell people. It's like a new nerd classification. It would be kind of cool and hip to tell people that, yeah, I really dig Scandinavian horror movies. It's that little niche market that you get to own a little piece of, because, you know, nobody else is into that. Okay, that's what I'm doing. And the first Scandinavian horror movie that I watched was Let the Right One In, and that's not on Instant Watch, so Don't start looking for it. But Let the Right One In, the Swedish vampire movie, and it was remade as Let Me In with Chloe Moretz. And the remake was really, really good, but the original was even better. Watch the original Swedish. It is amazing. If you don't mind reading movies, and I've discovered I don't, dude, Let the Right One In is an awesome, awesome vampire movie. But the ones that I did see this summer on my Roku is I saw Troll Hunter, which is, Trollhunter is Norwegian, and it is literally about a dude that hunts trolls in Norway, and it's just really well put together, okay? Yeah, there's a few cheesy special effects here and there, but don't let that distract you, because the whole thing is, A, really funny. Just the situation itself is just entertaining as all get out, and the story has some real tension and just a cool mythos that is really worth watching. Loved Trollhunter. All right, and then to complete my trifecta of Swedish or Scandinavian horror movies, I had Sweden, I had Norway. Now we move on to Finland, and the Finnish movie is Rare Exports, A Christmas Story or A Christmas Tale, something like that. But it's called Rare Exports, and I can't say a whole lot about it without giving the whole thing away, but the concept as introduced early on is what happens if we find Santa Claus buried out in the tundra? What happens when we dig him up? And I'll give you a hint. It's horrifying. It is. I can't. Just watch it. Watch Rare Exports. I'm not going to give away anything more than that, because if you have Netflix, it's on Instant Watch. You have no excuse for not seeing this movie. And it's just spectacular. It's just so much fun. Me and my wife and my second oldest, Italian, we all 3 watched together and just had a blast. And we've been telling everybody to go see it, because it's that much fun. So those are my trio of Scandinavian horror movies. Now I've got Cold Prey is right up here in my up in my cabinet where we keep our Netflix discs. So I've got Cold Prey here, and then I suppose if I really want to be a true aficionado of Scandinavian horror movies, I would also need to pick up a Danish film and an Icelandic film and stuff like that, and complete the whole Scandinavian greater metropolitan area, as it were. Haven't gotten that far yet, but I've got a list of Scandinavian horror movies. We'll try out two or three. Obviously, I'll tell you guys about them, and we'll see where it goes. But so far, the Scandinavians have just impressed the hell out of me with these. It's just cool. They're so very different from American horror films. I mean, which, you know, obviously the same is true of, you know, all the Japanese horror films that have been groundbreaking and sensational, and then Americans steal their ideas, and then American horror movies become what that was. Well, we haven't stolen all the Scandinavians' good ideas yet, so it's worth checking out. I'm really having a good time. And you know what? I skipped this one before because I thought I wasn't going to have enough time, but you know what? I got plenty of time today. I'm going to go back to the gaming table for just a minute.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.
I've got Kitty Pride and Nightcrawler 2 waiting there for me. It's every time I hear that song, I have to finish out the lyrics in my head. So if I ever seem distracted when the gaming table section starts, it's because I'm singing in my head. I love that song. back to the gaming table. Last week, I mentioned the 24-hour gaming challenge, and I mentioned that the theme for it, and of course this was 4 months ago, so you guys are really so behind the time. The 24-hour gaming challenge and the theme for it was Enclosed Spaces, and I told you that Joel had helped me come up with a really good idea for it. And I was going to wait and share this next week because I thought I wouldn't have enough time, but let's do it. The idea, and I just talked with Joel about it again today, so I could refresh my memory on it. The idea was Nerdlander. There can be only one. Okay. Enclosed Spaces. The Enclosed Space is the Indianapolis Convention Center in Indianapolis during Gen Con. All right, got it? All the doors are locked. We've got multiple hotels. We've got the whole convention space. We've got all the different floors and staircases, but everything is sealed, completely sealed. And now, for whatever reason, Nerdlander, the immortal gamers, have risen up to battle each other within Gen Con. All right, so there are thousands upon thousands of people here, but only a few Nerdlanders, only a few who have real power. All right, and then each one, their powers are based on whatever their particular area of expertise is. So you're going to have a cosplayer, you're going to have a minis gamer, you're going to have role-playing gamers of various stripes. So imagine all the different kinds of nerd that might come together at Gen Con, and there's a lot of them, all right? And now imagine that there's a dozen Nerdlanders, each drawing their power from a different source, all right, and having spectacular anime-style combats within the convention center based around these nerd tropes, and the whole thing would just be this huge bloodbath, ultimately, because we've got all sorts of pawns and minions and innocent bystanders, and again, the doors of the convention center are locked until there's only one. That's the whole thing. So we've got the 4 days of Gen Con for somebody to come out the winner, all right? And not only do I think this is a great idea, I think this is a great idea for a convention game to be played at Gen Con. What better way to set the mood for a game than to play out exactly this environment that they're already sitting in, this environment that is already overwhelming and exciting. I mean, your pulse just races at Gen Con as a nerd because it's just, there's so much everywhere. There's so much to absorb, so much that you want to take in and just wish you had, weeks to absorb every facet of that convention. So it's overwhelming and huge. And now imagine playing a convention game at Gen Con where you're playing these masters of gaming power, these Nerdlanders who are slaughtering people by the dozens in their quest for the ultimate prize. And I haven't even decided what the ultimate prize would be, but it would be much cooler than the original Highlander. I'll tell you that one. Seriously, omniscience and mortality? Who the hell wants that? I mean, we can do way better than that in Nerdlander. So that was our idea. I haven't done a thing for it. I thought I might write some stuff up because I was busy writing a bunch of games at the beginning of the summer. And then, of course, summer came and I took a four-month break, so I haven't written anything for it. But what a great idea. Feel free to play around with this. Let me know what you think of it, because I'm really excited about the concept. What an awesome game to play. And that can only mean it's time for the Badass Movie Quote of the Week. All right. You know what? I'm not even going to tell you where it's from. I'll let you guys listen first. Quote, "There are three rules that I live by. Never get less than 12 hours sleep. Never play cards with a guy who has the same first name as a city. And never get involved with a woman with a tattoo of a dagger anywhere on her body. Now, you stick to that, everything else is cream cheese." End quote. That's right. That was Coach Finstock, played by Jay Tarsies, from Teen Wolf with Michael J. Fox. There's something about that quote that a kid comes to him with real problems, real serious problems, like being a werewolf, but whatever it is. And the coach's answer is this complete non sequitur. I've always enjoyed that quote. I thought it was the funniest part of that movie when I first saw it. Which, by the way, Teen Wolf is still a good 80s teen movie. It's got bullies. It's got the underdog hero, the nerd who makes good because he gets superpowers. It's got the cute best friend, girlfriend. It's got all the tropes of your standard 80s teen movie, all surrounding Michael J. Fox as a werewolf. And Michael J. Fox, by the way, Back to the Future 2 notwithstanding, Michael J. Fox, good actor. Lots of fun to watch. Did I tell you guys about Back to the Future 2? Did I tell you, by the way? Saw that over the summer, too. No, I guess I haven't told you yet. Worst movie ever made. Oh, watching Back to the Future 2 tarnished my awesome, awesome love for Back to the Future, which, by the way, I've seen multiple times. That is a movie that, for me, has always held up over the years. I've always loved Back to the Future. I've always thought it was well-constructed, and yes, there's some logic problems with the time travel, and there's some corny bits, and it's a little tropey, but who cares? Back to the Future was just well-constructed and a ton of fun, and then Back to the Future 2 was a horrible, horrible Saturday morning cartoon carried to this illogical extreme that just, oh, it was a waste of my time. Why did no one ever warn me? I mean, I knew it wasn't supposed to be as good as the first, but did you know, if you go on Rotten Tomatoes, the thing gets like 67%. It's got a fresh rating. How is that even possible? Are their memories that clouded? Oh, Mike, all right, but no, forget that. That was Michael J. Fox's huge failing. Okay, we get that. That and The Frighteners. All right. But other than that, his body of work is strong, and I have a lot of respect for Michael J. Fox. And Teen Wolf is one of his better movies. It was just a lot of fun. Silly, stupid, fun. And you know what was missing from last week's show? That's right, it's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog! This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that's where you come in. You want to hear me haver on about something? Then send your question or topic to me by email or, better yet, in a private message on our forums, and I will add it to the Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. I cannot believe I put out last week's episode without the Pod-O-Matic. I can't. Yeah, I mean, look, it was a conscious decision that, look, I recorded this. I got interrupted because my son had to go see the doctor, and then I just never got back to it. And so I made the commitment to myself that I was just going to publish the episode exactly as it was. And I still, it hurts me that I didn't throw in at least one Pod-O-Matic. We've never had an episode without a Pod-O-Matic. It's disconcerting. It really is. But we're here to rectify that with number 90. Thank you, R2. Number 90 is from a Mr. Zimney Pot. And Zimney Pot says, "What song do you secretly love to blast when you're alone?" Oh, Zimney, why do you ask me questions like this? You're going to force me to embarrass myself because I know the answer. I can't even believe I'm going to tell you guys this. The song Fidelity by Regina Spektor. I am ashamed of myself. I know. But it's just, there's something about that song. I just, I, I never loved nobody fully. Always one foot on the... You know the song I'm talking about. Okay, good. Don't make me sing it anymore in front of you. Because when it's on and I'm by myself, I sing at the top of my lungs. And I love that song. And it just... It moves me. And it's... And, oh, God, I feel like... I feel like such a wussy. But I like that song. I can't help it. But again, only when I'm by myself. There's one of the very few songs I have that I'm really ashamed of and that I don't play in front of other people. I mean, I can play a Britney Spears tune without shame, all right? I can do lots of things, but Regina Spektor, it kind of hurts me. It hurts my heart. But you know what? You're not going to judge me for it. Number 10. This one is from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, sometimes you bleep yourself and your songs, sometimes you don't. So what the f*** is your policy on profanity in the podcast? All right. My policy is that f*** and f*** are right out for the most part. All right. Then in case I remember to go back and bleep that, that would be the S word and the F word. You know, the ones I'm talking about. Other than that, you know, the other stuff, it's milder. You know, the stuff that you can see more regularly on network television, you know. I don't mind ass. I use ass all the time. Badass, kickass, just plain old ass. I'm good with that. I suppose I could use piss, although I don't think I've ever used piss on the podcast. Bitch. I've used bitch a couple of times in context, and I've bleeped it, and I've used bitch at other times, and I haven't. I haven't really decided on that one yet. Damn and hell. Yeah, whatever. But I also try, even though I'm going to leave in some of those swear words during most podcasts, I try not to overuse them, except for kickass and badass. I love those. I try not to overuse them. I'm trying to keep a podcast that is, you know, while I may discuss things that are mature topics at times, for the most part, you know, this is just about my love of nerd stuff, and I'm pretty childlike in a lot of things. And I want this podcast to be school safe and work safe is the bottom line to it. I want whoever wants to listen to me, I want them to feel free to listen to me. And I don't want some 13-year-old kid having to worry that his parents are going to overhear it because, you know, I'm full of profanity or I'm talking about pornographic subject matter or whatever. It's a personal preference. I've done a podcast prior to this one, the Animal Cast, where all bets were off. I mean, we were foul. We were filthy. We were as bad as it gets. Well, maybe not as bad as it gets, but we did some really funny, funny, raunchy stuff. And I had a great time doing that. I really did. I loved that podcast. I'm very, very proud of the 115 episodes of the Animal Cast that we did. They were wonderful and hysterical. I still maintain it's the funniest podcast ever created. But I wanted to do something different with Nerd Pride. Nerd Pride is geared for a different audience. It's just me by myself talking. I don't have my brother as a partner anymore. And I wanted to do something different, something that could be more available and shared more widely than I could with Animal Cast. That's just the way it works out. So, excellent question, Billy Bob. That's what's going on with it. And I'm going to continue to be inconsistent about when I bleep and when I don't, just because I'm an inconsistent kind of guy. And I'm also really lazy, and I forget to check a lot of stuff. And, you know, like right here, this particular question, I should be making a note, because I always jot down what number I rolled so that later I can copy-paste so I have all the podomatics in a single list after it's all done. And so where I'm putting down this number, I should make a note right here that says, hey, go bleep those. But you know what? I'm lazy and I'm not gonna. And so hopefully I remember. We'll see. If not, you guys get to hear me say shit and f***. Hey, won't be the first time. Number 38 from Billy Bob again. And Billy Bob says, how are you with tongue twisters? Oh, dude, are you coming on to me? Seriously? What did I just say about appropriateness? What? All right. How am I with tongue twisters? Not great. I mean, I'm not bad. You know, everyone can do Peter Piper or even Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers. But I don't know. I've never seen so much the appeal of tongue twisters. They hurt me. They just, like, Yancey just gave me one, like, 3 days ago. I can't even remember what it was. But the one I gave back to him, the one that always gets me, is Toy Boat. Toy boat. Go ahead, say it five times real fast. Now pause the podcast and now say toy boat five times really fast. You even try saying it in your head, you're still going to screw it up. Watch, 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 watch. Toy boat, toy boat, toy. See, by the second or third one, it's always toy boat for me. I can't do it. Toy boat. Oh, drives me crazy. That was. Although I still remember when I was a kid, the Guinness Book of World Records listed the world record for most difficult tongue twister. And how they determined that, I don't know. But at the time, this was when I was in grade school, so 30-something years ago, the most difficult tongue twister, according to the Guinness Book, was the sixth sick sheik's sixth sheep's sick. There you go. Say that really fast. Even once. I can't do it. Although, I guess when it comes down to tongue twisters, I did always love Fox and Socks. That was absolutely my favorite book when I was a kid. I love Dr. Seuss in general, but Fox and Socks was my favorite book. And I just remember taking it to my grandfather, who has been dead for 35 years now. But I remember taking it to my grandfather, and I was so excited to have him read it because he was such a laid-back dude. He was just such an easygoing customer. And I always thought I was way cleverer than I really was, and I was so excited to have him read Fox and Socks because I knew it would trip him up, and it would be so funny to watch Grandpa, well, Pawpaw, we called him. It'd be so funny to watch Pawpaw trip over his tongue on this one. And so he sat me down, and he's like, no problem, let's go. And he starts reading, and he is intentionally reading as slow as possible. Luke Luck likes lakes. Luke's duck likes lakes. Oh, darn you, Grandpa, you're supposed to read it fast. And he says, well, no, if I read it fast, I'll get it wrong. No, he was on to me. I don't know how he outsmarted a six-year-old, but he did. Oh, man, it was so clever. Number 53. This one is from a Mr. Brasky. Brasky says, finish this sequence. 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 20. Obviously, the next one is 30, and then 100. All right, and I'm guessing, just if I know Brasky, this is some sort of trap, and he's got some other pattern that I'm completely missing, and you know what? That's okay. I'll accept that. Because I know 30 and then 100 is the proper end of that sequence. Number 21. This one comes from Brasky again. Brasky says, who's hotter, Liza Minnelli in Arthur or Penny Marshall as Laverne? I don't know what your obsession with Liza Minnelli is, dude, because you posed the same sort of question on the forums, also featuring Liza Minnelli. But, dude, I got to go with Liza Minnelli on this one. I just, only because Penny Marshall, as Laverne or in any other role or context, has never been an attractive woman. All right? Is she a talented director? Possibly so. All right. Is she a smart, capable, intelligent woman? I'm sure she is. Attractive? I don't think that's ever been applied to her. No. All right. Whereas Liza Minnelli, while absolutely off the wall, bat crazy, and she's got crazy eyes, dude. Crazy eyes. Have you looked at her? She's crazy. Okay. But Liza Minnelli, while not a stunner, in my opinion, has the features of a woman who is attractive. She's not really attractive, but has the right features. She has the potential. She has, you can see in some of her earlier stuff when she was younger, you can see that she had that potential to be cute. All right, she wasn't always cute, but you could see where in the right light she had that. So if I've got to choose between Liza Minnelli and Penny Marshall, I'm going to choose Liza Minnelli, but, you know, it's under duress. It's with a registered protest. All right. Number 23 from Stan. Stan says, were you present during the births of your children? Yes. Yes, I was. All four of them. Continuation of question. Did you get woozy, disgusted, freaked out at any point? Yes. Two stories. One, no, wait, three stories. One, the first son, my wife went into labor, and the process took forever, and she got toxemia. I think it was toxemia, and her blood pressure dropped to something like 50 over 25, and they were trying to induce so the baby would come faster, and we were in labor forever, ever. And then he was born at 3:15 in the afternoon, which I remember because it was right in the middle of Animaniacs, so I completely missed Animaniacs for the day. Oh, I was pissed. I guess I do use pissed. All right. But that was scary. That was really scary because she could have died. You know, if it weren't for modern medicine, if it weren't for the fact that we were in the hospital, she would have died. There was a lot of issues that went along with that, and it was very scary. So yes, freaked out on that one. I mean, I didn't freak out. I mean, I kept my cool. I was there for her. We did everything we needed to do, but was it scary? Yes. Terribly, terribly scary. Woozy, disgusted? No, not by any stretch. With the second child, Italian, when he came out, this is just my first look at my baby, all right? The doctor holds him up, and me and Nadia are looking at him together, and the first thought in both of our heads is, oh, why are his cheeks so huge? Oh, my God, this kid had these fat, fat cheeks that just, I mean, freakishly fat. He was, like, pudgy little face. And so even until he was, like, 5 years old, he always looked like a fat kid because he had these big old puffy cheeks. But he wasn't a fat kid. He was a skinny little kid. But he had these big cheeks. And now he's grown into him, and he's actually an incredibly handsome man. And he was even adorable back then. He was still extremely cute, but with abnormally large cheeks. It was just weird. And then the third child, who was also our smallest child, only scared me because everything happened so fast. It was, you know, like she wakes up, it's time to go to the hospital. Okay, let's go to the hospital. And by the time we get there, she was in so much pain. It was just unreal. It was more intense and faster than the other two. Her body just handled it completely differently. And it got to the point where she's yelling at the nurse because the doctor isn't even here yet. We've only been there 30 minutes. She's yelling at the nurse that the baby is coming right now. And the nurse is like, oh, please, you were only dilated 3. Don't even... Da, 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 da. And she's blowing us off, but she says, all right, well, let's check. Oh, my God, the baby's coming right now. So something happened that her body just progressed through all of the stages of labor at super high speed, and it was unbelievably painful. But from what she says, it didn't hurt me at all, actually. And I mean, like, next thing I know, I'm looking at my wife and I'm like, baby, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. And then I turn back and boom, baby's there. And so my first words at seeing child number 3 were, holy crap! Because the whole process from her first labor pains all the way to birth, it just progressed so quickly that it was just scary. And it was, you know, everything was fine. There was nothing to worry about, no problems, no anything. It was just really fast for some reason. And then child number 4, the only horrifying thing about child number 4 is it was the middle of the night, and like the first two, took forever again, and we had nothing on the television except VH1 all night. VH1 overnight from like 1 in the morning until 7 or 8. It's the only time during the day that they actually play music videos. And so there we were for like 5 hours, 6 hours, listening to nothing but VH1 music videos repeated over and over. It was like, it was on a loop that they couldn't have been but 45 minutes to an hour before they start repeating songs. And the worst part of it, and any of the songs from that night, when I hear them, it sets up this visceral reaction in me that it just creeps me out to hear them because I hate those songs now. That waiting, that overnight, that nothing but... And then, of course, we had the beautiful baby afterwards. But all night long, so you had a bad day. Oh, God, that was at the top of the charts at the time that my fourth son was born. So I had to put up with that all night long. Oh, it was terrifying. Terrifying! Number 47, Brasky kicks in again. Brasky says, if you could read minds, how often would you do it? And how often do you think you'd be doing it in a year after you'd gotten over the whole whoa factor of it? The whoa factor of it. Yeah, dude, if I could read minds, I would be doing it all the time. I mean, because you can read minds, and therefore, you have this ability to see what I did. You can peek behind the curtain. Of course you're going to be doing it all the time. I mean, here it is, this chance to just to see what's going on. You know you want to, all right? And you tell yourself that you really shouldn't. It's not fair. It's why, you know, I shouldn't do that. It's an invasion of people's privacy, and yet I do it all the time because you can't help yourself, all right? Assuming that I'm having a form of telepathy / mind reading that I can turn on and off at will. I mean, obviously, if I can't turn it off, then it's not really my choice how often I peek into other people's heads. But if I've got the choice, oh, yeah, I do it all the time right at the beginning. And then, you know what would happen? Yeah, I think you're right. The woe factor would wear off, and you would also realize that other people's thoughts are just not that interesting. I mean, you know, yeah, there's always times that you're going to be curious, but for the most part, I think you would get bored. I remember this is at my previous job, and this was about 15 years ago when that office first got computerization. We first got we got laptops in, we got computers in, and it was the very first for any of us. And because of the way things were set up, I had the ability to go in and look at my boss's files, all right, because he didn't put any security on it, and it was connected right there. And so I had the ability to go in and look at his personal correspondence. It wasn't even email at the time. It was just his personal files, what documents he's working on, evaluations, you know, stuff like that. I had the ability to look, and then I quickly realized that there's nothing to be gained there. There's no insight to be had. It's not even that fascinating. All right. I mean, I went and looked, and I saw what kinds of documents he had, and I can't remember a single one of them because it was, oh yeah, well, he's creating charts to track this kind of stuff, and oh, he has to write a letter to this vendor, and oh, he has to. I mean, it was all just common, ordinary. You know, maybe. And I thought at the time it was just because he was too dumb to know how to put security on anything, but maybe it's also because he knew there was nothing worth looking at in there. Who knows? And so after that first initial, hey, look what I can do. And I went in to look to see what it was, and then I never went back. After that day, it's like, oh, all right, well, that wasn't very exciting. Because I think most of the stuff that's going on in other people's heads is going to be pretty mundane, ordinary stuff. Hey, I can't forget to pick up the kids after work. And, oh, what was the name of that guy? Oh, hey, I forgot to, you know, I mean, it's just going to be dull. It is, it's a lot of waiting around for something exciting, and yet nothing exciting is ever going to happen. It would be, you know, like putting a hidden camera in somebody's house, and yeah, they might do some interesting stuff, but Jesus, you got to sit through what? You know, 20 hours of boring, horrible, mundane, everyday footage before you get to the, oh my God, look, he's totally picking his nose, or whatever it is that you're watching for, perv. So, that's my take on it, is that it would get dull even faster than a year. So, I would probably, anyway, I've gone on long enough. You get the point. Number 23, this one. This one's from a tie-in, my own son. And the tie-in says, can you finish out the rest of this episode with a lisp? Well, I suppose so. My only problem with using a lisp for the rest of the episode is A, it's hard to concentrate on a lisp and on what I'm trying to say at the same time. And I would be afraid that this would be offensive to people with real speech impediments. Is this offensive? Because I just want you to know, in my mind, I'm thinking Sylvester from Bugs Bunny and Tweety and all that. The Looney Tunes. That's the word I'm thinking. See, I can't think when I'm lisping. And so it's not intended to be offensive in any way. I've had my own speech impediment growing up. I understand the stigma that goes with it, but I do have a request, so I have to try. We'll see. Number 44, Serious Paul. Choose a single piece of cybernetics you would have implanted from Shadowrun. The implanted encephalon, the extra brain power thing. I have a short story, beginning of a novel, really, that I wrote, where one of the characters has a implanted in Cephalon that does a lot of his thinking for him, his background thinking, calculations. Can I say funds? I can't know. Lisping is tough. That's what I would do. And I don't want to dwell on it too much because I have to think too much and I can't think and lisp at the same time. Number 16. Serious Paul again. Ever ride a motorcycle? No, not really. I've been on the back of a motorcycle when my college roommate got one. And I rode with him a few times. But no, that's about it. Never driven one by myself. Number 66. Serious Paul again. Have you ever been to India? Adam just went. He said it rocked. No, never been to India. I've been to Canada, Japan, Korea, Mexico. That's about it. Oh, and on my honeymoon, I went to Jamaica and the Cayman Islands. Does that count? And Mexico again. Yeah, that's about it. And I actually have a lot of good Japan stories. I think I've told some of them already. But you know what? Somebody asked me, tell me a good Japan story. Send that in, and next time it comes up, I'll tell you some really cool ones when my tongue is working better. All right. Number 42, Rothist Pegacorn. Rothist Pegacorn says, here's a joke I can't use anymore, so I'll give it to you for free. What's better than Christopher Reeve? Christopher Walken. Ha ha, get it? Walken? Because that dude fell off a horse. Am I right? Dude, that's a Rothist. Seriously. That is so offensive.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2012 by Nerd Pride Radio. This week's theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. Our only bumper music was In the Garage by Weezer. If you feel like doing something nice for the podcast, head on over to iTunes and write us a nice review. If you want to contact me, you can always email me at mike@nerdprideradio.com or check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be totally honest, the best way to talk to me is to come sign up for our forums at nerdprideradio.com/forums. Sign up. Send me a message. We'll hang out. We'll have fun. Seriously. Charleston. Charleston, made in Carolina, thumb dance, thumb prance. I'll say there's nothing ever finer than Charleston. Charleston, Lord, how you can shuffle. Every step you do leads to something new. I don't know the rest of the song. That's all Sylvester ever sang.